From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I'm Justin Spears, joined here with Michael Lev. Happy Monday, everybody, and we are officially heading into the Pac-12 season. Michael, the beef of the season.
I can see you're excited, Justin. There's a certain look in your eyes, like a sparkle, now that Pac-12 play is about to begin.
Well, I mean, it's not the sexiest openers, considering it is Oregon State, but it is Pac-12 season, and Arizona's 1-2.
I think it's a very interesting game, and we'll get to it a little bit later in the podcast. I don't think it's a slam dunk victory like a lot of other people do. But like I said, we'll get to that. Let's talk a little bit about Southern Utah first, shall we?
Sure. So Arizona, they beat Southern Utah 62-31 to end the non-conference slate. And I mean, looking back at the film, I mean, you watched it more in depth, but the more I really got to think about it, I was like, okay, well, I was impressed by the defense only because they were able to force interceptions. Jerry Swallows had an interception.
They could have had more than one takeaway. They did force two fumbles, and you know, people say fumble luck, it's kind of 50-50, you know, so they easily could have had more than one takeaway. But
third downs,
it wasn't what you would call like an overall impressive defensive performance, right? I mean, they gave up 31 points. Remember Jace Whitaker, when he was healthy and speaking to us during the preseason, said, you know, they'd look at their average points allowed per game last season being around 34, and they weren't happy with that. Well, they just gave up 31
to an FCS opponent.
They were 10 for 22 on third down, and there were two others where it was like third and long, and they ended up being like 1 or 2 yards short, and then they converted on fourth down. So it's maybe even a little worse than it looks. Kevin Sumlin said today during his press conference that he wanted that number to be around 35%.
Well, that's a bit of big emphasis last week. You know, I think we talk as a team about goals, about, you know, third down offensively, and, you know, wanting to be 40% or better on offensive conversion rate in third down, which is pretty good, and we've been able to reach that. We've been 40% or higher for the first three games. Conversely, we have not met our goal on defense, you know, and that needs to be around 35% or lower, and we haven't done that. And, you know, you go back and look at this, even the first game, you know, there were some critical third downs that BYU made and that kept drives alive and were really the difference in the game. And so, you know, we're looking at that plan. We've talked about it. What that looks like is different for different teams. So, but the bottom line is we haven't reached hit our goals on third down conversion rate on defense against our opponents, and you know that's kept them on the field and allowed them to score points. So, you know, it all goes hand in hand. Is it third and short? Is it third and long? It's been the third and medium. It's been all three. And you know, that's something that we're working hard to shore up.
And they're not there right now as far as opponents converting their third downs. And this has been a bugaboo ever since Marcel Yates has been here. And I thought at the beginning of last year, for maybe about half the season, that they kind of had it straightened out, and then they kind of got gradually worse, and they haven't really gotten better. And it wasn't for lack of trying stuff either. I mean, they tried all sorts of different blitzes, double linebacker blitzes, double A-gap blitzes. I know you know exactly what that means as a former center, probably the thing you
terrible
you look forward to the least, right? They rushed six guys at times when Southern Utah was in a five wide formation, which means what? That's 6-on-5. Someone should get home, and they still weren't able to get home. So you can cite, you know, Marcel Yates' schemes all you want, but at some point the players have to make plays on third downs. Like I've heard, you know, having done this for a long time, a lot of people say third downs just comes down to one-on-one matchups, you know, and winning those one-on-one matchups, whether that's pass rusher versus lineman or cornerback versus receiver, they need to win more of those.
And, you know, sure, the defense looked all right at times during that game, but at the same time, you know, they didn't have all their pieces. They were still missing Justin Belknap, who broke his foot. We don't know the timetable for him. P.J. Johnson was out with an ankle injury. Derek Bowles, who was very limited. He did get some a little bit of time, but
didn't look very limited. Right. Yeah. Plus, I mean, the secondary, right? Jace Whitaker started the game and then hurt his, looked like maybe his left elbow or forearm or something, and came out after the first series. Scotty Young started the game, and then we didn't see him at all in the second half. Isaiah Hayes, who missed all of last season with a shoulder injury, seemed to look like he injured his shoulder on a tackle. And then David Coleman, we saw him when we were walking out of the stadium. He was on crutches, had a big brace on his knee. So that's four safeties or four defensive backs right there. Three of them safeties. Suddenly, you know, one of those positions where you're like, oh, you know, they've got really good depth at safety. Well, if three guys are unavailable, I mean, you don't have really good depth at safety. So I think a lot of concerns on that side of the ball. And I asked Kevin Sumlin toward the end of his presser today, you know, do you know who's going to be available Saturday? And I think he was honest when he said, we don't really know. You know, we'll get out on the practice field and kind of find out. I think the good news in that regard is that Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, after a really rough week one, has played much better the last 2 weeks and is starting to play like the kind of senior leader that we thought he could be back there.
Now, you know, looking ahead to this week's matchup against Oregon State, you, like you said, I thought it was very interesting what you said at the beginning of this broadcast was, isn't expected to be a slam dunk win that everybody thought it was. I mean, including myself, I was a person that always said, you know, Arizona week one in the Pac-12 season, they're going to go up to Corvallis, they're going to win handedly. Now, after watching this team over the last 3 weeks, I'm like, you know, Oregon State, they did lose to Nevada, which isn't a good look considering Nevada is a rebuilding program, but Oregon State could possibly beat Arizona this week.
They did outgain Nevada pretty substantially in that game. Obviously, you know, you lose to a Mountain West team. It's not super impressive. But then again, you know, Arizona got killed by Houston, right? Which turned around and got killed by Texas Tech.
Yeah.
You know, Houston gave up, 63 points to Texas Tech after shutting out Arizona in the first half. I was definitely encouraged by what I saw offensively in this game, even though Khalil Tate, as Kevin Sumlin mentioned, is still not 100% with that ankle, and he kind of aggravated it on that one run when he fumbled and kind of got it twisted around. And we don't know if/when we're going to see the complete Tate show like we saw last year, where it's not only passing but running as well. But you can see signs, right? Like, he looked more comfortable in the pocket when he was moving outside of the pocket, kept his eyes downfield, threw with accuracy. They have an offensive line unit that I think they feel good about now, whereas when Leif Freck wasn't in there, it was kind of like, gosh, you know, we have no experience. Guys are playing new positions. Like,
or attitude.
Plus the attitude. Like, the one thing about Leif, there's two things about Leif. One is, I think he's probably the most athletic of those five guys, so you will see him blocking guys downfield. And the other piece of that is that it takes some attitude to do that too. Like, you have to want to finish your blocks and just kind of bury guys and put them in the ground. And Leif kind of brings that that element to the game.
But it's not even just like off the field. We kind of laughed after the games, the post-game press conference, when it was Leif Frick and linebacker Anthony Pandy. Yeah. They were walking out, and you just hear Leif Frick like, wipe the sweat off your face, man. You look like an idiot. You know, so that's that attitude you're talking about.
Right, right. Yeah, like, he's like a savvy leader, you know? Like, and I think he seems like one of those guys who can get along with, you know, not only his fellow offensive linemen, but can maybe mix it up with Khalil Tate a little bit. Kevin, someone said he didn't notice this during the game, probably because he was actually watching what was going on the field, but I noticed that Khalil seemed to be in a much better mood, like, on the sideline. And maybe that's just because he was throwing touchdown passes and they're winning. Everything was going great. And the previous week he was injured, but he just seemed kind of sullen, you know, during that Houston game, sitting on the bench, kind of keeping to himself. Maybe it was because he was hurt. Maybe because they were getting blown out. Maybe it was because it was like 150 degrees on the field or whatever. But I liked what I saw from him from a leadership and body language perspective in that Southern Utah game. What he needs to do, and I think this is part of the learning curve for him, is you need to be that way no matter what's happening. You know, you need to keep everybody else's spirits up So, you know, hopefully he'll kind of get better in that area.
You know, and I think that's why when you asked him after the game, he's like, well, what was the first 2 weeks like? And he was confused.
Yeah, he didn't really get it. Like, I sort of expected him to say, oh, it was super frustrating for me, I was miserable, etc. Yeah, he didn't really kind of understand what I was getting at. But I think that his body language on the sideline at Houston kind of answered the question. You know, he wasn't super happy. And obviously everyone's happier when you're winning. But as a quarterback, you know, you have to kind of set that tone that no matter what's going on, we've still got a chance. We're still in this thing. Mm-hmm. Still a relatively young guy. Still a lot of lessons for him to learn. And I think he's learning them.
Mm-hmm. One player that I've been impressed with over the last couple of weeks, and I think everybody can agree with me on this, wide receiver Tony Ellison. He had a career high performance against Southern Utah with 111 receiving yards. And Kevin Sumlin said in the press conference, he was like, you look at him in practice and you're like, he's all right.
You know, Tony's one of those guys that you just keep looking at the practice and you know, you go back and you watch tape and all he does is get open all the time, you know, and you look at him at practice and you're like, yeah, he's all right. And then, you know, every Saturday he just makes plays. And there's guys like that. You know, he's... You know, it's a joke, but it's true. But it's a joke. You know, you talk about, you know, what's your job as a receiver? Number one's get open. Number two is catch ball, and he does both of those very well. Khalil knows that. We all know that, and at critical times. So he's been as consistent as a player as on this team for the first three games, and he's been effective. So. You know, he knows what he's doing. He likes to play the game, and he's a heck of a competitor. And I think that kind of attitude can be contagious. And I think it throughout that group and throughout the team.
But then he makes plays on Saturdays, and you saw that last week against Southern Utah, and even a little bit against Houston.
So I really hate to make compare the white receiver to the white receiver thing, but remember when Chris Hogan was on Hard Knocks a few years ago, and they said he was like 7-11, right? He was always open. Kevin Sumlin kind of said the same thing about Tony Ellison. Like, he just has a knack for getting open. He has a good feel. He has good hands, and he's always had a really good chemistry with Khalil Tate for whatever reason. I don't know if that's because maybe they were both backups, you know, when Khalil first got here, so maybe they got a lot of reps together. But they've always had a good connection. And Khalil said the other night, like, when I'm in trouble, I look for Tony Ellison. And people were kind of, I don't know, skeptical maybe about the receiving core coming into the season. Like, didn't look like there was like a dude, right? Like, some good players, but not anyone who is amazing. I've been impressed with Sean Brown, Tony Ellison, Sean Poindexter. I mean, did you know Sean Poindexter was that fast?
No.
The way he pulled away from that guy. I mean, he caught the ball around the 30-yard line. And by the time he got in the end zone, he had about 10 yards of separation. Did you see his tweet about that, where he did the run, Forrest, run?
No.
Kind of thing. And one of his teammates posted a little video of Forrest Gump, you know, doing that kind of running, which I thought was good. But I've been impressed with the receiving core, and those guys are going to have to continue to make big plays, those chunk plays. That's what Kevin Sumlin wanted to see from his team, and then they went out and produced them.
Well, Sean Poindexter, he was originally going to play volleyball. Mm-hmm. Was it Cal Baptist?
Yep.
And then he went and played junior college football at Eastern Arizona, if I'm not mistaken.
Glendale.
And, you know, after watching his film when he first came to Arizona, I noticed his height. But that was also another thing when you talked about him running down the sideline, is he got caught a lot. At the junior college level. And that's where I was like, okay, well, he could be a good red zone guy, where you get inside the red zone, you put it over the top and let him go up and get it. But will he be able to make strides and go down the field? And, man, that was a 75-yard touchdown?
Yes, that was the longest play of his career. And he literally made strides, strides, to pull away. He's an interesting case in that, as you said, he was a volleyball player.
Yeah.
And he took a couple years off from school entirely and athletics entirely to work, help out his family. It's been a long-term project, but he's put in the work, and we're starting to see the dividends of that now.
So this week against Oregon State, you know, Arizona's defense is a little bit depleted. We've mentioned all the injuries. We don't know if Jace Whitaker or Scotty Young Jr. are going to be able to, et cetera. You know, if Arizona, if they were to look good defensively, what's a guy that you think will make a big jump this week?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I was impressed with J.B. Brown this past week, who got his first career start. He shows a really good knack in the run game, especially. His background is as a middle linebacker, so that makes sense. He's able to kind of read run plays. I saw him come down the line a couple times with really good hustle and effort and bring guys down. Jalen Harris, I think, is going to be a really good pass rusher someday. I don't know if that day is this upcoming Saturday against Oregon State, because when you look at him, great length, long arms, good suddenness, quickness, speed, all of those things, but he's still not quite big and strong enough. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he's put on probably 15 or 20 pounds, and he probably needs another 15 or 20 pounds, you know, before he's really a consistent Pac-12 player. Did I mention Demetrius Flanagan Fowles?
Yeah.
I think I did. He looked really good to me this past week. I thought he was playing really well against Houston. What worries me about this game is that Oregon State has run the ball really well the last couple weeks. They've got a kid named Jermar Jefferson who's come in as an injury replacement and has really kind of lit it up. Kevin Sumlin mentioned that he's the leading rusher in the Pac-12. Right now, I remember when they went up there a couple years ago. It was a late season game. There was really kind of nothing to play for, and it was kind of like Ryan Nall. Remember Ryan Nall? Ryan Nall left, Ryan Nall right. He just overpowered the Arizona defense, and that would be my biggest concern going into this game. That Oregon State's going to be like, you know what? We need to keep this explosive Arizona offense off the field. We have a physical advantage in the trenches. We're just going to run it down Arizona's throat. So someone's going to have to step up and stop the run. I feel like if PJ Johnson is able to come back, that would help a lot, give them a big body in the middle, but can't be just him.
Yeah. You know, against Southern Utah, you know, I hate that we keep going back to this game, but the quarterback, I thought he was going to be throwing the ball a lot, and he was able to get mobile and move the ball around. And even Southern Utah's running backs, I mean, they had their way in the first half against Arizona, which I agree with you, Michael. I think if Oregon State, they hand off the ball, because Arizona doesn't have that depth on the depth chart, and it seems like the linebackers are trying to make plays, and they just the way the defensive line, the linebackers are moving, running backs have their way against this defense. At least that's what I took away from the first two.
I mean, I use the word discipline in my five takeaways, and that can mean a lot of different things. Sometimes it's discipline with your, you know, containment on the edge. You know, that's been a problem for them. Like Kylan Wilborn, I feel like he's been overly aggressive at times, and that's one of the reasons he's maybe not making as many plays or getting as much playing time, is that he's not, you know, executing his assignment sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the pass rushers are just flying upfield, and that's opening things up for a quarterback draw or for the quarterback to step up in the pocket and make a play that way. And sometimes it's penalties, which is something that I meant to ask Coach Sumlin about, and we didn't get around to it today, but ton of penalties in this last game. Even Colin Schooler was guilty of kind of an after the whistle infraction. And I just don't think there's enough talent, depth, or health on the defensive side for them to make all of those mistakes. Like, they need to be really fundamentally sound and do their jobs on every single play in order to be effective. And if they're not doing that, they're going to be in trouble.
So let's guess Arizona's uniform combination this week, because that's the news that everybody wants to know.
Yeah, well, we know it's going to be white shirts, right? Because it's a road game. Usually it's white shirts on the road. Their first road game, they went with the blue, white, blue, which is my personal favorite combo. I'm guessing since they lost that game, and since Kevin Sumlin loves red, that we're going to see maybe like a red, white, red deal. What do you think? Maybe bring out the chrome helmets for that?
Yeah. Red, white, red. Every time I think of that, I always think of the game against Cal last year, right? Because that was the combination that they wore when, you know, they had a pretty good game against Cal. Colin Schooler is the one that had the interception, right, in the end zone?
It wasn't an interception. It was he batted the ball away.
Batted the ball away. Jarius Wallace had an interception that
sure
game, though.
Did, yes. So you'd kind of be amazed at how much time we spend talking and thinking about the uniforms. But I was saying to someone earlier today, like, when they wear the chrome, I'd rather they wear the chrome with white. Because when they wear the chrome with red, it kind of looks like two different reds.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a kind of a weird contrast. So if you're going to break out the chrome, Do it with the white jerseys.
I'm not a big fan of the chrome helmets. They look like Christmas ornaments. I'm thinking...
It's an odd color, to be sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if we saw that this week.
So, red helmets. I'm assuming Oregon State's wearing white helmets this week?
Oh, I don't know. They have a lot of... I like their color scheme, and we are spending a lot of time talking about uniforms, by the way, but I do like their color scheme a lot. The black and the orange. I don't know if they're going to wear white helmets or not, but they usually have kind of a sort of semi-traditional type of look, which I like.
Okay.
Especially in college football. I was talking about LSU's uniforms the other day. Just classic. You know, they never really mess with them. Like the gold and purple. Like you just know. It just says college football, doesn't it? So you know what else does? An afternoon start. You got a nice afternoon start up in Corvallis. Nothing could make me happier than kicking off, you know, whether it's cloudy or sunny. Having that nice 1 o'clock start, that feels like college football to me.
In Oregon, too, of all places.
Yeah, you know, the temperatures, the highs are like in the low 70s and the lows in the upper 40s. Feels kind of nice. Sounds kind of nice, doesn't it?
We're going to get you back, right? Are you going to stay up there for a little bit?
I'm not going to stay up there, no. No, I will be back.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Download the app. It's free. Get the Wildcaster app on the App Store and Google Play.
Yeah, the most extensive uniform and travel breakdowns that you will find anywhere in the Pac-12 right here on the Wildcast Podcast.
For Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.